Welcome to another episode of Meet Me at the Library, the podcast that talks about programs and resources at Charlotte Mecklenburg Library, and many of these you can also access at home. I'm Jeff. I'm the teen librarian at North County Regional Library, and I'm also working here at the Digital Branch.
I'm Mark Engelbrecht, the branch leader of the Plaza Midwood location. That's located on Central and Plaza in the middle of the Plaza Midwood neighborhood.
For the next few episodes, we'll be focused on programs and resources related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. In other words, STEAM. In this particular episode of Meet Me at the Library, we're going to talk about programs and resources available through the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library System that are related to makerspaces. Makerspaces cover the technology aspect of STEAM. We're going to find out from library experts what they have to offer and where you can find them.
With us today is Aubrey Hedrick. Aubrey currently runs the Idea Box, which is the makerspace at Main Library located at 310 North Tryon Street. We also have Seth Irvin, the Chief Innovation Officer of the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library System. Seth, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role in the organization as well as specifically the Idea Box?
Yes, sure. I am the Chief Innovation Officer for the library, and with that, it's a brand new role, so I get to define it. So that's an exciting possibility.
Fun and scary, I imagine.
It definitely wavers from scary, scary, funny, or fun. And it's, you know, it's something that, you know, whatever. I just do the best I can. I get up and go. I'm like, let's go make the library a better place. So in this role, I am over the makerspaces, the makerspace activity. I'm also over any future transitions, future projects that the library is going to engage in that are kind of outside of the norm of business as usual, but are possible future lines of business that we may engage in. Sure. I basically, with my job, I can get into anyone's lane at any time, which could be annoying and exciting. But, you know, I don't know any other way to do this job other than to kind of be embedded and see what's happening and try to think of new ways of doing things. So it's really a privilege to be able to serve the library and the community in this way.
Great.
Aubrey, please tell us about yourself and what you do here in the Makerspace.
Yes, I run the Makerspace here uptown, and I've helped set up the other locations that we've been working on building. So I train people on the equipment. I help users with their projects. I maintain the equipment, all that kind of fun stuff.
Now, am I right in thinking that there's a kit or a packet that could be transferred from location to location to where you can kind of have an ad hoc makerspace at some branches? Is that something we're still offering?
So we had studio satellites for a while, satellite studios. And those were kind of prefab kits that had a specific activity that different locations could set up and provide a program. That's something that we kind of still currently have, but they're not used as much. That's probably something we'd also be looking to update in the future as well, just to make them more interesting and current with what we're offering now.
Right. That's cool.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Another thing that we've done, you guys were mentioning kits that have come out. Podcast kits just released this past September.
Right.
Which is kind of ironic since I'm saying that on a podcast.
That's right.
But we have 10 kits that were grant funded. They are open to the public to check out free of charge. So we're really excited about that.
So where are the other libraries?
So currently we have this location here at the Main Library and then our recently renovated library, Morrison, that's over in the South Park area. They also have a smaller makerspace. And Imaginon has always kind of had their own version of a makerspace, Studio I, and we're actually currently in the process of updating their technology and equipment. So they'll be getting some new exciting technology.
There should be new equipment before the end of the calendar year, so look for that.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, though, of course, to note about Imaginon is that it is a youth library. So this equipment is housed in their teen loft area, and so it's pretty much only for a teenage age group. So in 2015, we opened this space here at Main Library, and this space is open to all members of the public, including adults, so people who perhaps have aged out of Imaginon.
Okay.
And we started providing here more of that digital fabrication stuff.
Sure.
So 3D printers, a laser cutter, a vinyl cutter, sewing machines. We use a lot of freeware, but different types of CAD software, stuff like that. And like I mentioned, as we're renovating other locations, we're trying to add makerspaces to those library locations as well.
Sure.
So you guys have talked about several of the pieces that are in here. Could you just kind of give us a virtual tour and a rough description of what each item does, just quick snippets so people know what they can come here and do?
Sure. I think in my mind, the big three pieces of equipment that people perhaps are looking to use being the 3D printers. So 3D printers, what we have, they're referred to as FDM printers. It's layered printing. Basically, it melts a spool of plastic down to a certain layer height, and it's just building whatever your 3D design is in those thin layers of plastic. So it's an additive process. It's just layered building afterwards. The vinyl cutter is, in my mind, essentially an X-Acto knife controlled by a computer. Okay. Because you provide it with a vector file. It's just a basic outline of a shape. And then whatever you've given it, that blade is just going to cut those lines.
Okay.
And then similarly, the laser cutter also utilizes vector files, but it has the ability to both engrave and cut. So it is essentially burning things into that wood. And depending on what you've set it to, it will either kind of engrave down, so give you kind of a burnt wood contrasting tone, or it will cut all the way through the object.
And it is a legitimate laser.
Yes, it is a carbon dioxide laser. I love it.
So you don't want to stick your finger under there.
You don't really even want to look at it very long because, I mean, it is
actually the reaction with the material produces a small UV light, so it is kind of like staring at a mini sun, so you're not supposed to do that.
Cool.
But luckily there's plenty of safety features that you can't actually put your hand under the laser while it's working.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm around.
Yes.
So the 3D printer, tell us, so I guess I have two questions.
Yes.
What kind of software are you using for that, and like how long is the process for the printing?
So there are lots of different free programs that you can use with the 3D printer. My favorite one to tell people to start with, it's actually just a website. It's completely cloud-based. You don't have to download anything. You just create an account. It's called Tinkercad, which is Tinker and then CAD, CAD.com.
Okay.
Basically, you're asked to create your little account, and then you have either the option to walk through some tutorials that will show you some basics about 3D modeling, grouping objects, creating holes, stuff like that. Or you can just skip ahead, and you'll have this virtual 3D platform. And the thing I like about Tinkercad is they actually provide you basic geometrics off to the side. And so you're not necessarily having to start completely from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
You're given, you know, toruses or cones, spheres, stuff like that, that you can add in together and start exploring how you're going to create your 3D model.
Okay.
Like I said, technically any 3D program is valid as long as it produces an STL. An STL is a universal 3D file. It's accepted by any 3D printer. And it's the easiest thing to work with. So that's always preferred.
So if you did your own design,
mm-hmm.
how would you incorporate that into the 3D printer?
So if you've created your own design, like I said, it would have to be in one of those three-dimensional programs because it requires that Z height, that third dimension information. But then we would set it up in the two printers that are here in this location are MakerBot replicators. And so each 3D printer, no matter the brand, has something that's referred to as a slicer. It's kind of, it's print preparation, basically. So you would load in your file, the design that you've just created, and then you can adjust settings. So if you have something that's like an overhang, a 90 degree, it's just in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Since it is a layered process and it's building up, it needs something called support structures, because otherwise when it gets to that, it's going to have nothing to build on. And it's just going to look kind of sad and melted. And you can check that you need support structures if you need to. You can vary the infill, which is literally how solid the object is, things like that. So it's just different types of settings for your print and how you need them to be. But once you've gone through that, you can just export it and start it on the printer.
But the biggest process, I think, is making sure that whatever you've designed is in that file format, that STL file format.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's say, so if you did a two-dimensional design, like if you just drew something on a piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
does it have the ability to then turn that into something 3D, or do you have to do all this 3D specs yourself?
So I think it depends on exactly what you're looking to get out of it in terms of 3D. Mm-hmm. So there are certain programs, Tinkercad included, mm-hmm. that you can import in a flat file, a vector file, and then just literally extrude it up.
Okay.
So it goes into that third dimension, but it doesn't have any kind of, you know, curves. It's basically your drawing, yeah. but just now.
I see.
Yeah, with mean. Depth. Okay. So it depends on exactly what you're looking. Like if you drew a shoe,
yeah.
and then just tried to import it in, you would have like an extruded side of a shoe, but it's not going to have those curves, that kind of depth information of an actual object.
It's a stick with a shoe silhouette.
Exactly. So I think it depends on exactly what you're looking to get.
Mm-hmm.
But if nothing else, it might at least give you kind of a base of, you know, this is what you're looking to start
okay.
with or go for.
Cool. Now, would you be better off using, say, a photograph of an object if you wanted to?
Unfortunately not, because that's actually... A photo is a very flat object, and so it
right.
has no information at all that can really be extrapolated, at least
okay.
as far as, you know, the basic 3D design that you'd be looking towards.
Gotcha.
So I think design is often the, especially 3D design, is
mm-hmm.
the more difficult process for people.
Okay.
Just because you are having to kind of imagine that dimensional information
right.
On a flat screen in front
right.
of you, but
okay,
3D scanners do exist. Depending on the price point, some
right.
of them are better than others. It's not something that we currently own, but yes, it's something that you can more or less kind of at least get a rough version of an object. But a lot of them are usually limited by size, because it's kind of like a carousel type setup. It's a camera and then a rotating platform in the center. So some of them usually has to be kind of like a desktop item that you can really scan.
I gotcha. Okay.
Aren't there apps,
cool.
though, that kind of do a really rough 3D scan? You can use your phone, take multiple pictures around the object.
There might be different ones now. There was one that we liked and we used a little bit. It was called 123D Catch.
Uh-huh.
It was put through Autodesk. Autodesk creates a lot of great different CAD programs. However, they had like a whole 123D suite, and then they came out with something called Fusion 360,
mm-hmm.
and they got rid of all their 123D programs
okay.
because they basically said, we've squished all these features into Fusion 360.
Now buy it.
Yeah,
now
but now
it.
Now pay for it.
Yeah.
Sure. So sadly, yes, there was an app. It's no longer supported. It's very sad.
So it was free, in other words.
Yes, it was free, and it was something that, like Seth mentioned, you can kind of take different photos at different angles and stuff and get kind of a loose scan of something, but it is no longer in existence.
Too bad.
And it's definitely something that we can revisit, you know, to add to the suite of Makerspace things, but it just hasn't come up yet.
So your best bet at this point is to go to the Tinkercad website and check it out and see what you can do.
Yeah, to at least, I think, mess around with the design process and see exactly, you know, how you feel about that and what you're getting into.
And that's not the only option, too, Jeff. There's thousands of 3D objects you can print from Thingiverse, thousands and thousands, where other people, you know, have come in and designed objects that you might find useful,
right?
Whether that be like a case for your cell phone or anything like that. So I mean, there's literally an ever growing catalog of stuff you can print from Thingiverse without ever having to do anything
really,
other than download the file.
So that's true. Seth is correct in that if you are not looking to design something specific,
mm-hmm.
maybe like he mentioned, if you're looking just for a case for your phone or something like that. Thingiverse is a file sharing website that literally other people have designed things and said, hey, I made this.
Yeah.
If you think it's cool and want to make one too, here's my file. It is, of course, you're kind of acknowledging that it's only for personal use. You're not going to go try to make a profit
right.
off of somebody else's work, something like that. But yeah, if you're just looking to make a very specific object that maybe somebody else has thought of, or if you're just looking to try 3D printing before you go through the whole process of 3D modeling, Thingiverse can be a great resource to look and find different files that already exist.
Cool. Great. So can you tell us a little bit more about the vinyl cutting and the...
So the vinyl cutter is, it does exactly what it sounds like. It cuts vinyl. most people tend to use it for stickers, signage, stuff like that. I've done a little bit of experimental screen printing where I use it as a physical resist instead of doing the whole chemical process. So, you know, you can do different things like that. We've had some people do stencils, stuff like that. The laser cutter, we here in the space, because it is a public building, we only cut cardboard, cardstock, and an eighth-inch birch plywood, just to be mindful of the fumes and stuff that's put off in this building.
Okay.
And I think, to me, that's probably the most versatile tool and probably the one that's used the most.
Okay.
Just because people have done things from wedding centerpieces, wedding favors, cake toppers, ornaments, creating boxes for board games that they're playing, signage for businesses.
Coasters.
There were lots of coasters for a while.
Earrings.
Yes. Mm. Lots of jewelry done. Different, like, intricate paper cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen a wide variety of things, and it's always just interesting to see what somebody's come up with, given, you know, these are your restrictions, and go. And then they think of a way to use it.
So what are the software requirements for?
So both the laser cutter and the vinyl cutter use vector files, and we actually use a freeware program. It's called Inkscape.
Okay.
It is a freeware contemporary to either CorelDRAW or Adobe Illustrator. Basically, what you're looking for is an SVG, a scalable vector graphic. So if you already have access to Illustrator, if you already have access to CorelDRAW, those are both fine. You can create in that program. That's works for us. But if you're looking for a free one, if you've never done it before, Inkscape is something that's free to download, and it's what we use here in the space as well.
Okay.
What's the file type?
An SVG, a scalable vector graphic.
So you guys have talked a little bit about the other locations that have makerspaces, and we've been in depth of what we got here at Main Library. Can we just jump over to, say, Morrison in terms of their makerspaces? Talk a little bit about what's offered there specifically. I know we've mentioned the 3D printer, but is there any other of the equipment maybe we have here or even something that's not offered here that's at Morrison?
The one thing that we have at Morrison that is different, and Aubrey can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a CNC machine versus a laser cutter, and it's called a Carvey. And how that device works is actually a drill that comes down and moves in a 3D space and drills out whatever you're wanting to design. So you take a piece of wood, take a piece of plastic, actual drill bit comes down and goes and does the design within it. So it's instead of the laser being a burning removal, it is a drill bit doing a physical removal. Is that adequate?
Yes, that is correct. everything you said, yes, that is correct. And I think the one thing, though, to know about it is that because, like I mentioned, you know, we are trying to be mindful of sawdust and stuff, it is a smaller footprint.
Mm-hmm.
So its maximum bed size is only about 8 by 10 inches because it's an enclosed object.
Okay.
It has a different kind of dimensional functionality, but a lot of traditional CNCs that people see are, you know, huge, kind of like 4 foot by 6 foot beds, and this is definitely kind of a smaller, just introductory tool.
Yeah, it's definitely a mini CNC, I should say. Mm-hmm.
So you're making three-dimensional items with it?
Yes, you can do, it's, like Seth, that is physically carving in,
right.
And so you can get a lot more kind of depth information as you're going.
Gotcha.
The other good thing, I guess, about that machine is that because it's physically carving instead of burning through, you don't have to be worried about a lot of different fumes
because
it's not burning them. So you do have the option of doing, like, linoleum blocks to make stamps, stuff like that.
Hmm. Okay, cool. So now you touched on this a little bit. I don't know if we can go more in depth, but what is the most popular item in the makerspace?
I think when the space first opened 3.5 years ago, the novelty of 3D printers, people were interested just in seeing them work. They had never been around them. But as time has gone on and people have actually learned different things of what the machines do and what they can actually do with it, the laser cutter has by far become the most popular item. And I think that's a combination of both In my mind, it's easier for people to catch on to the 2D design rather than the 3D, but also time. My patience with 3D printing is limited just because the nature of the process, it's layered, it takes time to build up objects. We have little example, like 1-inch cubes that we give away that has our little name and logo on it, and an individual cube takes half an hour. So a lot of people, I think, you know, they've seen maybe time-lapse videos of a 3D printer, and they don't realize how long it's going to take. But it's not unusual for an item to take, you know, 6 to 12 hours to have to print. Versus the laser cutter, if you were engraving everything on the board and then also had some cuts, you're looking at maybe a maximum of an hour and a half. So things get done a lot quicker.
Yeah, so I see a little... Is that a building on the 3D printer right there, or is that a robot?
I almost say Taj Mahal. What is on the 3D printer behind you now?
This was a patron's project that started yesterday. I believe he said it's designed to be some type of keychain, but I do not know exactly what it's supposed to look like in the end.
Okay.
And then we see some chess pieces that I guess are samples of some of the things that you can do. I assume those are just
We have a lot of example items that we leave out in the space just so that people who perhaps have never been here before don't exactly know what they could make. They can look around and kind of see examples of things that maybe staff members have made before in the past and, you know, get them thinking about what they would want to do.
So how long did that one that's on there right now take to print?
So it looks like, and it's maybe a 3-inch tall object.
Yeah.
It took 4 hours and 15 minutes.
Okay. Wow.
So something like that, is not unusual. And so we do often see people come in and they, you know, they have their project and we'll get it set up and then we tell them how long it's going to take and they're usually surprised.
Right.
They're like, oh. But that's just the nature of the process because it has to build in those thin layers on top of itself. So
is there much of a backlog in terms of, you know, do you have something that's queued up as soon as this is done? You got to print something else from another customer?
So it varies. And... I guess it really does depend on how long the time of everyone's print is going to be. But because the 3D printers, you know, it's not unusual to have them both running at the same time. And something, you know, if somebody else comes in, we will allow people, if they've come in and the 3D printers are currently in use, to go ahead and set up their file and leave it with us to start the next day. And that's just because of the way, you know, it takes so long, and plus the machines can run by themselves overnight once we've started the print job. But we do require them to actually come in person and set up the file.
Okay, so if just to understand what the customer can expect when they want to come in and use that particular device is, if they've already got their design, save it to a flash drive, it's got to be the proper file format, which is?
An STL.
STL, thank you. They'll come in, you'll say, hey, I've got a printer ready, here's how you set it up. They'll queue it up, and then they'll just come back in a day or two based on the length of the project.
We'll tell them how long it's going to take and about how much it's going to cost them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always tell people you're welcome to sit there and stare at the printer as long as you want. But,
that's,
you know,
free.
You yes, that's a free service we offer. But you are in no way required to sit here for the whole time, especially because it's often running past when we're even closed.
Right.
So some people like to watch it get started. But, yeah, usually I'll say, you know, it's going to be done in however many hours. You can come back the next day.
It's a little more exciting than watching paint dry.
Just a little.
It is actually, if you've never seen it before, it's really interesting.
I think when it first starts moving, people are excited at first, and then they realize how slowly each thing is being built. And they're like, okay, I'll come back in an hour and see what the progress looks like. But yeah, just staring at it the whole time is very...
So the novelty wears off pretty quickly.
Yes, it does.
For me especially.
Yes.
So you shouldn't plan to walk right in off the street and print something and walk out with it on your lunch hour. You need to plan in advance and go ahead and assume that it's going to be something you're going to set it and come back a little bit later.
Yeah, that's typically how it ends up being. Every now and then somebody will have a very small item and they might be able to, you know, hang out for an hour and get it quickly done. But standard for 3D printing is you come in, set it up, we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
Great.
And it does make really interesting sounds. I don't know how you would describe those sounds other than like it sounds like some version of weird offbeat electronic music as it prints. So
I kind of feel like I've worked with different 3D printers, and these are by far the noisiest ones that I've encountered. And I feel like somewhere somebody in the design was really wanting to play up the like futuristic electronic aspect.
That's
and just, yeah, like kicked it into high gear because I have no idea why these would need to be more, you know, they make all these funny little...
These maker bots. I mean, it sounds like R2-D2 singing.
So they're beeping and...
Yeah, yeah they
oh,
make
interesting.
All...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to do a recording.
Yeah, we'll get
yeah.
We'll get a sample of that.
Intro yeah. music for the podcast.
So, Aubrey and Seth, two questions. So, what are the hours of the makerspace here at Main Library and at the other libraries? And then, what kind of programming opportunities do you have related to makerspaces?
So, right now, our hours here are limited to, we're only open 4 days a week. And on Monday and Wednesday, we're open from 1 to 5, and Tuesday and Thursday from 4 to 8. That's mostly we don't have dedicated staffing for here, so we kind of have rotational people in and out. We're hoping to expand in the future, okay. But that is something
near
we're...
Near future.
Near future, yes. So that's something we're working towards. And so, again, given the not fully dedicated staff, that usually you'll see kind of an occasional program that's maybe, you know, an outside presenter, or
okay.
they'll have something that's a very basic kind of this is how you use the machine. But most of the time, we're facilitating just this open studio time that, you know, we only have that four-hour block per day at the moment. So we want to give the public really the most time they can to come
mm-hmm.
in and work on their projects,
sure.
really maximize the time that they're given. So, but people are welcome during that time to come in, continue to work on something, or if they've already designed it at home, they can just start the project here. You know, they can always ask the staff in here for help with the project as they're going, questions if they've run into a problem. It's kind of like a whole bunch of one-on-one tutoring sessions that
mm-hmm.
happen all at the same time,
yeah.
if that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Well, and something Aubrey's not saying, which takes place outside of our open hours, is the makerspace has been a big support for some of our more traditional programming. Whether that be like the final draft event that the foundation puts on, design little takeaways for that, for our Comic-Con and Magic-Con, we made vinyl stickers for that event. So there's
okay.
a lot of things that Makerspace does in the background to help support some of the more traditional programming that happens
right.
in the library system. So
okay.
and it wouldn't happen otherwise without Aubrey and the Makerspace.
So it's a live action Makerspace.
Oh, yeah. There's always stuff happening in here. And I think in relation to what Seth was saying, I like when other staff members see what can be done in here
yeah.
and get kind of inspired for how they can use it to enhance their programs. We have one staff member here at Main Library who does sensory programs for adults with
mm-hmm.
disabilities. And so she usually has some type of like theme that she's working around, and then they do an activity and stuff. And so she used to hand cut a lot of different paper items that they would use for their activity. And she has since realized that a laser is great at cutting paper and
wow.
can cut multiples over and over. So we get to help her with a lot of those programs
okay.
that then she's able to provide to the public.
And then she gets to tell them there was a laser involved.
Of course, yeah.
Which is always a bonus.
And I mean, that's kind of a microcosm of my vision for Makerspaces. Not that they aren't spaces in their own right, but that our staff begin to leverage these tools for greater efficiency, more productivity, and more creativity, honestly. So
potential for some more in-house production that may not directly be a part of the makerspace, but we're using the makerspace as one of our many tools as staff to provide programming or
yeah,
just something to augment our current offerings.
Yeah, still used and represented, but not necessarily that it has to be here in this physical room. Yeah.
Excellent.
Right. And what about, do you know about Morrison?
So Morrison is in flux right now with us as well, in that we're hoping to get them a more specific dedicated time.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't know their current hours
okay.
Off the top of my head. The best thing to do is to call that branch.
Right.
I know because they're still trying to do their day-to-day library operations
yes.
that even if they don't have someone physically in the room, You can always ask, and there's a few staff members who are more well-versed than others, but they're able to go in there with you. So even if you don't necessarily see the door open, it does not hurt to ask at one of the desks.
Sure.
And one of those staff members, you know, would be able to take you in there and kind of help you out.
And my goal with that, with Morrison Makerspace, is to find a dedicated staff person, much like Aubrey is for this one, to reside in that space and to activate it for the public. So we're just in transition. So.
We want to thank Aubrey and Seth for coming by and talking to us about Makerspaces.
Awesome. That was fun.
All right, so thank you again for joining us for Meet Me at the Library. We hope you've enjoyed the program. Look for our upcoming episodes on STEAM, again, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. We're talking about arts through Charlotte McMurgo Library. To see and hear more from the Digital Branch, please visit us at digitalbranch.cmlibrary.org. And if you want to visit the library, you can check out www.cmlibrary.org to see all of our programs and resources. You can also check the library's calendar, and you can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, #CMLibrary and @CMLibrary. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.